Today on Rainbow Country, Gay Men's Perspective, talking about Pride and Police, self-proclaimed feminist Megan Murphy, homophobia in Toronto's gay village, plus coverage of Indie Week, music festival and conference with Icelandic recording artist Valberg. Stay tuned for Gay Talk Radio Toronto Style right here on Rainbow Country.
Hi, I'm Garrett Conley, author of Boy Erased, a memoir. You're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 89.5 FM.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Rainbow Country, a little gay radio show working to give voice to the LGBT community. And as always, I am your tour guide through Rainbow Country. I'm Mark Tara. Brotherhood, a film written and directed by Richard Bell, opens in Toronto for a week-long engagement starting December 6th at Cineplex Yonge and Dundas. Here's a little bit about the synopsis. A group of teenage boys arrive at Long Point Camp on Lake Balsam for the ultimate Canadian experience. 2 weeks of games, kite making, canoeing, and so much more. Great war veterans, Arthur and Robert, along with the group of teenage boys, set off across Lake Balsam in a 30-foot canoe when they encounter a freak summer storm. The canoe capsizes and the holiday descends into a fight for survival. Only four will survive. Based on the true story that made headlines across North America in the 1920s, Brotherhood opens in Toronto for a week-long engagement starting December 6th. At Yonge and Dundas. Cineplex, Yonge and Dundas. So, the time has come for improvisers to lip-sync for their lives. Lip-synced, an improv show featuring drag in a game show format hosted by Tom Hearn. It's a lip-syncing comedy party, darlings. A lip-syncing comedy party. Some of Toronto's best improvisers perform scenes based on songs, and at the end of each scene, they must lip-sync for their lives. But don't worry, they'll have some help from some awesome, fierce drag assassins. The audiences help to decide who will stay and who will sashay away. So, don't fuck it up. Lip-synced happens Friday, December 6th at 10:30, Buddies in Bad Times Theatre in Toronto, 12 Alexander Street. For more information, buddiesinbadtimes.com. So my friends, this is episode 179. Today, coverage of Indie Week Music Festival and Conference with an interview featuring Icelandic recording artist Valberg. Plus, Gay Men's Perspective, featuring three members of Toronto's LGBT community. Photographer and activist, Adam Zivo. Steve Degay, producer of Toronto Song Project. And DJ Rob. We'll talk about Pride and Police, self-proclaimed feminist Megan Murphy, and homophobia in Toronto's gay village. But up first, Icelandic recording artist Valberg.
Hey, stuck in A4.
Here with Valberg from Iceland. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm doing so good. I'm really happy to be a part of this festival, Indie Week.
Indie Week is happening.
Yes.
And you are here, your band. You're also here with your guitarist.
Yes, Carlotta.
Yes.
She's also a really good singer.
Talk to me about the sound of your band, Valberg.
All right. So I live in the south of Iceland, and I started to write my songs over there. I moved from Reykjavik, which is a big city in Iceland, to the countryside, 2012. And I did these six songs that I put on this first album of mine that I, influenced from the countryside. So it's like a pop folk, I would say, music.
And the band is under your name, Valberg?
Yeah, the band is my name, Valborg Ólafs. Yes.
And how long has this group been going?
Basically, since last year, when we went to a studio, when we were recording this album. So, yeah, two years almost?
Growing up, did you always want to be a singer, a songwriter, a performer?
I always wanted to be a musician, not just a singer. You know, I've been singing since I was really small, and I've been writing songs, you know, and making my own songs since I was maybe 12 years old. I play on a piano and a guitar and drums. I always wanted to be a drummer. But I just started to do my own stuff, and I'm really proud of it. It's really nice.
You should be. Do you play drums in your band? Do you play drums live?
No, not really. It's just okay. For my, you know, like a shower drumming.
Okay. Do you play drums in the studio when you're recording?
No, I have a drummer for that. He is really, really talented. So I just do the lead guitar in my in this album, and I sing all the voices.
And you write the material.
Yeah.
And so what inspires you to write? Where do you get your inspirations from when you're writing?
It's just, I would say, just straight from my heart. What I, you know, am doing in life and, you know, these ups and downs that we go through. And I got much stronger after I became a farmer and, you know, learning stuff in life. So I it comes from my heart.
So you're also a farmer?
Yeah, I'm a farmer.
What kind of farm?
So I have a land in the south of Iceland. We have around 70 horses and 200 sheep, 7 chicken, 2 dogs, and all kinds of stuff happening. I have a guest house, so I'm renting out rooms in my home for travelers that come to Iceland. So you're welcome to come and visit me.
So is your farm, do you guys raise crops or is it animals mostly?
Mostly animals now, yeah. Okay. So, yeah, we need to cut the grass and, you know, make hay for the animals in the wintertime.
Do you have a home studio?
Home studio, that is the future dream.
Okay.
So we will have that in the countryside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would think that would be so relaxing.
Mm-hmm.
With the animals out there,
yeah,
nature, calm,
mm-hmm.
And, you know, spill your emotions.
That's right.
In the studio.
It's so good. Hopefully.
Do you have music videos that are out on, say, YouTube, that sort of thing?
Yes, there are music videos on YouTube that... So we did that this year, wasn't it? This year we did a live session that is on YouTube, and please check it out. It's Valborg Olavs. It may be hard to, V-A-L-B-O-R-G.
Yeah, spell it out.
Yes.
Spell it like
check
it is.
Check it out.
So 2020, what can people expect from you in 2020?
So I have so many new songs that I wrote after this came out. There's just like a fire inside of me. And so we are going to go into a studio and record, another album or just throw it out on the internet world.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah.
Valborg,
yes.
Thanks for your time. Thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mark. Wonderful. Woohoo!
For more information on Valborg, check her out on Facebook. Just search Valborg, V-A-L-B-O-R-G. Photographer Adam Zivo. Steve Dige, producer of Toronto Song Project. And DJ Rob. We'll talk about Pride and Police, self-proclaimed feminist Megan Murphy, and homophobia in Toronto's gay village. Okay, here we go. On this episode, a roundtable chat on the topics of pride and policing, freedom of speech, hate speech. Joining me in studio, DJ Rob. Hello.
Hello, Mark.
Steve Dige from Toronto Song Project. Hi.
Hey.
Photographer Adam Zivo. How are you?
Hey, I'm good.
First of all, I asked all of you to take part in this roundtable to get your perspectives as gay men on topics I just mentioned. But before we get into the heart of the matter, I want to go around the table to find out what you guys have been up to recently. You've all been on the show in various shapes and forms. So, Adam Zivo, you are a photographer. You're an activist. You have the campaign Love is Love is Love. During Pride 2019, you had the Big Gay Bus. What's new with you?
Well, we just launched a scholarship yesterday, and that's called Queering STEM. So the idea is to support youth who are LGBT, who want to study science, technology, engineering, and math. And I just came back from Taipei, where I'm shooting a documentary on marriage equality.
Fantastic. And I think you're a little jet lagged.
Very.
Steve Dige, you are a singer, you're a songwriter, you're a TV producer. Toronto Song Project is your current endeavor. What's going on in the world of Steve Dige?
I'm putting together another episode of my show where I interview a singer and write a song for them. And I'm staging events in Toronto called Battle of the Number One Hits. And what we do is we get people excited about pop songs. We get people excited and having fun in a room together.
Fantastic. Sounds like fun.
Slaying the Demon of Loneliness.
Okay.
That's what it's about.
Okay. DJ Rob, you perform, you DJ around Toronto's gay village at various establishments over the last few years. What's going on in your world?
Oh, right now I'm just basically taking life easy, looking for more creative outlets, and possibly may pick up DJing again.
Well said. So, here we go. Pride Toronto, Black Lives Matter Toronto, Toronto Police. We all know what happened in 2016, where Pride Toronto invited Black Lives Matter Toronto to be part of the festivities, to be in the parade, to lead the parade. They did. They stopped the parade. They made some demands, one of which was to eliminate having Toronto police in uniform marching in the parade going forward. That was in 2016. We are in 2019. As of today, Toronto police has no interest in going back into the gay pride parade. Rob, what is your take on everything that happened in 2016 and moving forward? What's your take on all of this?
Oh, that's all-encompassing. I was rather surprised it happened. I didn't believe it was happening, and I really couldn't figure out what the basis of it was. And this, what you just said about them not being interested in going back, I have not heard that, because I think the majority of the community wishes they would.
Steve Dige, what's your thought?
Yeah, I mean, I remember a time when we were really, I want to say at war with the police, but we were just like where a relationship between the gay community, lesbian community, and the police is just awful.
So for the bathhouse raids.
Yes, all of that. It was just terrible times. And I had friends who were entrapped by the police for cruising in parks and stuff like that. And police officers would go on the stand and lie and lie. Like, it was just an awful time. So for me, it was always a huge personal triumph for the gay community. And just to see those police cars with rainbow flags on them. So that was just, you know, having been through what we had been through, it actually, I would get a little choked up to see that, just thinking how far we had come. Mm-hmm. But that said, the whole Bruce MacArthur thing went down. I mean, we still have a long ways to go. I would rather see members of Black Lives Matter and the black community in the parade than the police. So that's kind of where I'm at. I do wish the police would come back, but only if on the right terms.
If all parties are welcoming.
Yes.
You know. Adam Szivo.
Well, I understand that there are serious issues with racism in the Toronto Police Force. And that's something that's been proven time and time again through staff reports. I don't think that BLMTO's strategy was effective. They didn't have any specific demands when it came to reevaluating whether or not Toronto Pride should reaccept police. And I think that lack of specificity is really shown in that it's been 3 years and we've had really no headway here. And we have no way of measuring what exactly is trying to be achieved.
Well, I will say this. In 2017, they were supposed to be back in the parade, Toronto Police. But that all fell through. This was all behind the scenes. It wasn't known publicly. But that was what was supposed to happen in 2017. Didn't happen. Moving forward, I think Toronto Police, I think they're frustrated. And there are members of the community that are in the police force. And how are they, as gay men, gay women, how are they supposed to feel where they want to show their pride and be part of this? And they can't in uniform. And, you know, it's frustrating, right, Steve?
I don't miss having the police in the parade. I mean, it was, like I said, it was a milestone for us, I think, to have them join the parade. I don't know. Like you said, it's wonderful to have gay and lesbian members, LGBT members of the police force. It would be – I would like to see them in uniform marching. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot to sort out before they come back.
Right. Rob, did you want to add anything more?
Well, yeah, to Steve's point, I enjoyed the police in the parade on both sides of the fence, either marching or enjoying it as spectators. So it just – I think it in general made the community feel comfortable as a whole. They're with us. Mm-hmm. You know, they used to do the march up and down Church Street on Pride weekend. I remember Julian Fantino when he was chief. You know, hello, hello, hello. And meanwhile, everybody was kind of afraid of him. But but yeah, I did enjoy the police in the parade.
Adam?
I think it was important having the police in the parade for its symbolic value. Mm-hmm. And I know that's often framed negatively where people view them as a symbol of oppression. However, if your stance is that there are massive issues with homophobia in the police force, then what better way to address that than to build links between the police
exactly.
and pride?
Yeah.
And the way
and
that
you
I see it –
can't do that if you're excluding people.
Well, the way that I see it is that if you have, you know, a homophobic police officer based in North Etobicoke or Scarborough who's never really engaged with pride and doesn't know anyone who's gay and has never really had their prejudices challenged – I think that knowing that your leadership is marching in the Pride Parade and seeing that there's a compatibility between police and the LGBT community helps you reassess your beliefs mm-hmm. and helps you think twice about being homophobic.
Well said. Well said. So this question can be just a simple yes or no, and if you want to elaborate, you can. But the question is, and Steve D. Gay, I'll start with yourself. Does your gay pride parade include Toronto Police?
I would like to see them back. Yeah. I would like to see them back.
Rob?
Yeah, me too. They always look like they're having a blast. So I'd enjoyed having them back and seeing them on the street after the parade, engaging with the public. You couldn't ask for more for community involvement. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Adam?
I'd say yes. I mean, for the LGBT community, we are a minority that has historically been excluded and oppressed. And our acceptance in society and our safety is very new. And so there's a deep vulnerability to us. And I think that we need to do as much as we can to protect ourselves And I think that alienating a powerful institution, which is popular in most of society, endangers us in the long term.
What's that? On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Bill 7, to ban discrimination in employment, government services, and housing based on a person's sexual orientation was up for a vote at Queen's Park. Most NDP and Liberal MPPs supported the bill. But without some progressive conservative legislators backing, a divisive split could rack the province. Four PCs decided to break party ranks to vote with their conscience and support Bill 7. Cabinet Minister and MPP Dennis Timbrell did it to show solidarity for his beloved brother, the well-known drag queen, Rusty Ryan. And for me, a gay politician who was not yet out, I had to take a stand. We were known as the Gang of Four. I'm former Cabinet Minister and MPP Phil Gillies. The date, December 2nd, 1986, when LGBT rights came to Ontario.
This is Brad Fraser, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.
Freedom of speech or hate speech? Christ Forgiveness Ministries, led by preacher David Lynn. Here is some background. In May 2019, members of the Christ Forgiveness Ministries came into Toronto's gay village to preach the word of God. And apparently God hates homosexuals. There was an altercation at that point, but there were no charges laid. June 2019, preacher David Lynn and some of his flock again came into Toronto's gay village to again preach the word of God. At that time, there was a big altercation. Preacher David Lynn ended up being charged with disturbing the peace and later on released on bail. Here is what's interesting. Before they were in Toronto's gay village, they were in Kensington Market preaching the word of God. They ended up running into Reverend Maggie Halwig of St. Stephen in the Fields Anglican Church. They ended up having a debate of sorts on the street with the Reverend. And at one point, a member of Preacher David Lynn's flock stated that they didn't believe the Reverend was a real Reverend. But wait. There's more. During Halloween on Church 2019, I had a conversation with a police officer who was at the June 2019 altercation. This officer had a conversation with one of the members of Christ Forgiveness Ministries. And I'm paraphrasing here, but the police officer asked the member, "Why are they doing what they're doing?" And they replied, "Because we're right." They replied, "Because they're right." Adam Zivo, I want to start with yourself. First of all, have you heard about this, these altercations?
Yes. I mean, I was there. I shot a documentary of the day that I'm currently editing. So during this sort of Christian positivity rally, as they call it, I spent about 6 hours in both the LGBT camp and in the Christian camp, and took a lot of time to listen to what was being said. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, David Lynn, the guy who does all of this, he's
Canadian.
Yeah. Well, so he was saying that no one wanted to have a debate with him, no one wanted to talk to him, and he was using that to posture in front of the camera and to paint the LGBT community as being irrational mm-hmm. and hostile. Mm-hmm. So I decided to step in and said, "Okay, if you want someone to talk to you, I'll come talk to you." And so I had about a 40-minute conversation with him discussing LGBT rights and got to get a bit of insight into how their reasoning works here and their little sort of gymnastics to make this right in their mind. And so during this conversation, it seemed that for him, he didn't understand that these beliefs might have harms to other people, right? So
his beliefs.
That his beliefs, yeah. Mm-hmm. So he said, you know, I'm here, I'm preaching this peacefully. Why is my freedom of expression being curtailed? Mm-hmm. And why are people shouting at me? Mm-hmm. And so I tried to explain to them that Christians have a history of trying to oppress LGBT rights, mm-hmm. which was something that he denied, which I thought was really bizarre. And that even if you don't think that these harms are real, I mean, it has an impact, right? When you say, for example, that you personally believe that marriage is between just a man and a woman, that we see that as a potential assault on our rights, mm-hmm. that we see this as an attempt to undermine rights that we fought for and push us back into being second-class citizens.
Right.
And so he thought that so long as his protest was peaceful, that we were the ones in the wrong.
And it wasn't necessarily peaceful. And I will say, if you go on YouTube, I think Christ Forgiveness Ministries, they have a YouTube channel. And what happened in June 2019 plays out in real time there. I think it's almost 2 hours. It's fascinating what happened. It's absolutely fascinating. Rob, what are your thoughts?
Well, this kind – I actually was out having a few cocktails with friends that afternoon and saw the news teams running around the street. No idea what was going on. I thought it was something to do with Doug Ford.
And was this in June?
Yeah. Okay. They had something about Doug Ford's decision about not to march in the parade. I thought that was why they were interviewing people. But it was this guy when I got home and saw the news. But yeah, it seemed like a very targeted attack to me. If this was his beliefs, why would he just go and stand there and then – claim all this nonsense about free speech when he basically went to the middle of the war zone.
Steve, DK?
Yeah, I don't know. We all know their end game. Their end game, if we got out of the way, if everybody got out of the way, if they got what they wanted, we would be back to the 1950s.
See, I don't know what their end game is because they were challenging that pastor in Kensington Market, mm-hmm. saying that she wasn't a real.
Well, I say their immediate end game is to get on the frickin' 6 o'clock news. That's mm-hmm. that's clear. That's clear. That's why they're staging these things. Mm-hmm.
Well, so having spoken with them and
say.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Having spoken with them and spoken with LGBT leaders who were strategizing how to respond to them, the understanding is that most of his following is online. Most of his following is the United States. He gets a lot of support and funds from evangelicals in the U.S. And so what he does these provocative stunts in order to goad community members into attacking him, reacting, shouting. Oh. And then he records that and then he puts that on YouTube and he says, look, we're being bullied, we're being harassed, yeah. we're being persecuted.
Yeah.
And he uses that narrative to build up his following in the U.S.
Because that's what he kept saying is, I'm being bullied, you're not letting me talk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Crazy. In September 2019, Christ Forgiveness Ministries planned to march through Toronto's gay village. There was a counter rally that was organized, the Unite for Love rally. At that rally, I asked members of the LGBT community, as well as former Premier Kathleen Wynne, City Councillor Christian Wong Tam, Councillor Joe Cressy, and others, this question that I'm about to ask you. Steve DK, why do you think in 2019 there's an uprise, because there is, in regards to homophobia, in regards to transphobia, in regards to this hate that's coming out? Why do you think that is?
I think it plays a lot into the narrative, the whole liberal elites narrative. I think a lot of people see the advancement of gays, of lesbians, of trans as being part of that liberal agenda. I think unfortunately we got caught up in, I think unfortunately we got thrown into that. But I think they're becoming much better at doing what they're doing. Like you said, they managed to paint us as intolerant, which is insane because he's out there preaching he's out there saying, oh, I'm just really nicely trying to tell you that you're all decadent and responsible for the downfall of our civilization and we should completely outlaw your behavior. I'm just really nicely saying that. Why won't you listen to me? You know, that's basically their message. It's it's insidious. It's disgusting. So,
Rob, what did you want to say?
Yeah, it's the typical double standard argument. Do as I say, not as I do. Mm-hmm. And to me, it's bleed over from what's going on in the U.S. too. Mm-hmm. There's just this constant vitriol about everything down there. And and they're trying to find an excuse up here to be just like our friends in the States.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Adam?
So I think that there's a constant responsibility for us to explain to people why our rights are important, because we're always, in a sense, held hostage by the majority. Unfortunately. And I think that in the mid-2010s, we stopped trying to explain ourselves to people and got a bit too coercive. And so focused on controlling the symptoms of homophobic beliefs rather than trying to address the homophobic beliefs themselves. And I think, you know, there's been a few articles discussing that period where there was a fear that LGBT people were being like sore winners in these cultural wars. And I think that that made us vulnerable because we created this pool of resentment that we were unable to address or even identify. And so we are reckoning with that pool. And I think that until we learn how to broaden our base of support and speak to people who don't already agree with LGBT rights and find a way to connect with them and translate our language into something that they can understand, I think we're going to continue to be vulnerable and deal with this uprise in homophobia.
Do you think that, for lack of better words, organizations like the alt-right, like Breitbart, an online website that preaches, you know, far right, pushes that agenda, and the rise of Donald Trump and the fact that he's, you know, been the president in the U.S. for the last, what, 3 years, 3.5 years, and potentially giving people the license to hate if they have that within them? Do you think, Rob, do you think that that is part and parcel of what's happening as well?
Oh, yes. You know,
it's a license.
Mob mentality, the old argument of mob mentality. You just get a group of people. I think the movie The Joker demonstrated that well at the end. You didn't know what they're all mad at, but they were just mad, and that's what's going on.
Steve, do you think that the rise of Donald Trump and Trumpism, and do you think that that's giving people the license to hate?
Yeah. And I think, sadly, I think we were ahead of them. I think the Rob Ford thing lit fire to that here. Rob Ford boycotting Gay Pride. There were incidents at that Ford Nation party of people yelling homophobic stuff at protesters and stuff. So I think it was already well underway here. I mean, Toronto, we especially if you live in the city, you feel like, wow, I'm in this amazing liberal, yeah, this amazing progressive place, and it's like it doesn't take much, and it's like, whoa, I didn't see that guy, I didn't know that was out there. Yeah, I think it was already happening here.
Adam, do you think the rise of Donald Trump is giving people the license to hate?
I think so. He's destigmatized hateful language, and he's proudly vilified minority groups, whether that be sexual and gender minorities or racial minorities. And that has an obvious impact on how people behave.
Well said, everyone. Mm-hmm. On that note, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
Hi, my name is Joanne Vanicola, and I'm an actor and a writer. And I was first on Rainbow Country with Mark Tara on CIUT 895 FM, discussing the massacre at Pulse Club in Orlando. I realized how important it was for our community to have a radio station, specifically for our issues, to talk about people in the LGBTQ community and to provide an outlet for our stories, to discuss our politics, culture, and give voice to the issues that matter to us. And, of course, our artists and the things that we do globally and right here in Toronto, and talk about culture. And without people like Mark Tara providing a space for this with a radio show like this, then we wouldn't have that voice. So support. Tune in. Thank you.
I'm Sky Gilbert, and you're listening to Rainbow Country with Mark Terra on CIUT 89.5 FM.
And then there's Megan Murphy, a Vancouver journalist, self-proclaimed feminist, banned from Twitter for expressing her views on gender identity. And basically, in a nutshell, Megan Murphy lectures that transgender rights endangers women and undermines their rights. In October 2019, she had a lecture at the Toronto Public Library, and the library stood its ground despite hundreds protesting the event, stating, as a public institution, it has an obligation to protect free speech regardless of beliefs. Adam Zivo, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think what a lot of people don't understand is that TPL legally had to let her speak, because as a public institution, it needs to follow the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And one of those freedoms is the freedom of expression. And the freedom of expression can only be curtailed in the case of hate speech. And our definition of hate speech in Canada is very limited. Now, people might say, well, why do we have freedom of expression? And we tend to forget how, as a community, us LGBT folks have historically benefited from that. You know, in the 70s, 80s, and even 90s, when no one else wanted to provide a space to publicly exist, it was public institutions that begrudgingly gave us that space because they had to, because freedom of expression mm-hmm. required that. And I think it's very iffy, ethically speaking, that now we're undermining this thing that because we no longer benefit from it. And obviously, Megan Murphy's beliefs are harmful and disgusting in many ways, but that's a necessary cost of ensuring that there are spaces for unpopular groups to be able to articulate themselves and exist publicly. The moment we start allowing the state to have robust powers to adjudicate what kind of opinions can publicly exist, we end up jeopardizing minority groups, including ourselves, should, you know, we become unpopular in the future.
Rob, you wanted to mention?
Yeah, Adam summed it up pretty good. That was my point, too. If she wasn't allowed to speak, I would have never really heard about this. So it's good to get to both sides out there so we know who to disagree with and not always agree with everybody all the time.
So here's another take. Do you think that Toronto Public Library potentially mishandled how this event went down? Maybe not necessarily canceling her event, but maybe having leaders from the transgender community share the stage and have her voice, but also have their voice at the same event at the same time, right? Adam, what do you think about that? They had to have the event, but do you think that they could have gone over and above that by opening it up to leaders of the trans community?
Well, I think it depends on how it's structured, right? So if you force Megan to share her room with transgender leaders, then that would seem to me like a violation of freedom of expression, much in the same way how, let's say, in the 70s or 80s, political pressure forced TPL to create a policy where if they had LGBT speakers, that it was required that you would have Christians there as well. Right. And that comparison may seem strange to some people, but we have to remember that the library is not really in a position to adjudicate what is appropriate speech or not outside of the very limited idea of hate speech. So I don't think that TPL really had a lot of options here. Their messaging was pretty strong and like very harsh sometimes, but that seemed like a response to the harsh criticism that they were receiving, which was sometimes kind of hysterical.
So if people want to find out more about you guys, you know, your projects, how to get in touch, all that sort of stuff, Steve Degay, how can they do that?
TorontoSongProject.com. That's the best place to reach me.
And Rob, are you on – how can people find out about you? Are you on
– I'm incredibly anonymous. I have no social media presence
at
all.
Which bathroom should I look for?
Which stall? Eagle, well, every Saturday.
I hear you. I hear you. Adam Zivo, what about yourself?
Well, you can learn more about the Love is Love Project at loveisloveislove.org, or you can learn more about me personally at adamzivo.com. That's ADAMZIV.com.
Well said, everyone. Thanks for your time and thanks for your views and your opinions. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you for having
us.
Thank
you, Mark.
Hello, my name is Conchita.
And I'm Barbecue.
And my name is Hardcora. And we are the Beat Girls.
You're listening to
Rainbow Country with Mark Tara
on CIUT 89.5 FM. Break free, break all the rules, just be girls.
A special thanks to Adam Zivo, Steve Degay, and DJ Rob for being willing to talk openly and candidly about some sensitive issues affecting Toronto's LGBT community. So, if you would like to be a guest on Rainbow Country, get in touch. My email, mark@marktara.com. To keep up to date with all things Rainbow Country, make sure you follow me on socials, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, even at Mark Tara Music. The podcast for Rainbow Country is on iTunes, Podomatic.com, Google Play Music, Stitcher Radio, and on Spotify. So get Rainbow Country wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Plus, the official Rainbow Country playlist featuring indie and LGBT recording artists featured on the show is now available on Spotify. Just search Rainbow Country Playlist. And of course, everything is hooked up at my website, marktara.com. Next week, the number one best-selling book, The Flyer Vault, 150 years of Toronto concert history. Finally, I want to take this time to thank you for taking your time to be with me. Remember, we live in days of making dreams come true. So believe in yourself, and the world will believe in you.
Hi, I'm Mayor John Tory, and you're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM.